Hello, this is Matt Hale with Resonance on... Sorry, let me start again. Sorry. One, two, three, go. This is Matt Hale with Art Monthly on Resonance FM, our regular programme each month where we bring in some writers from the current issue. And the current issue is, for us, November issue 341. And just to say to you, before I go any further, very quickly, that there is a great offer for Resonance readers for a subscription to Art Monthly. You get 30% off, and if you email subs@artmonthly.co.uk, you'll get that offer, and we highly recommend it. There is a difference between reading the magazine and hearing the writers speak. Today, I'm privileged to be joined by Colin Perry, who has come back to speak with us again. He's a writer and critic based in London. And also, I'm joined by Clara Kemp Welsh, who's a Leverhulme Early Career Fellow at the Courtauld Institute of Art. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, we're going to start with the Manifesta 8 review, which Colin wrote. It was also covered in the same issue by Teresa Gledow, so if you buy the magazine, you can get to read another review as well. And we may refer to that review occasionally, but we're basically... Colin's going to give his impressions of going to Manifesta, which was in Spain. We're going to then follow that with a discussion of another review of another, a biennial in Liverpool. I don't know how many there have been of that, that was written, the review, by Clara. So, but we'll start with you, Colin. You went to Spain. I believe it was delayed. It was you booked your flight, and then they said, no, you can't come now. We're on strike or something.
Yeah, they were revolting in Spain, yeah.
I beg your pardon. Spanish are very nice people. No, yeah. So you ended up getting there, but I'm afraid that was a bit of a delay problem.
Yeah, but... No, it was staged in two cities in southern Spain. It's a roaming biennial. It moves to different cities around Europe every 2 years. And
this is presumably the eighth one.
Yeah, this is the eighth one. It started in 1996 in Rotterdam, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's toured around various other places. It's been in Spain once before.
Oh, really?
In the Basque region in San Sebastian.
Yes.
Can't remember which year that was in. But
Where is it in Spain this time again? Sorry.
So it's in these two sort of smallish cities in southern Spain called Murcia and Cartagena.
Well pronounced.
they're really beautiful cities, I have to say. I mean, part of the joy of going to biennials is just to travel around and see places, to be honest. I mean,
of course,
we can sort of be po-faced and talk about the seriousness of importance of art for all we want, but you know, there's obviously an element of just plain tourism about it, and
yeah,
sitting around in squares eating tapas. And,
yeah, I mean, you bring up this idea of tourism, which is interesting because there is an element of why the cities received the Manifesta 8 is because I understand that they supply money to pay for it. But what's the reason? Why would they spend £3.3 million?
Euros. Presumably they feel like they can get the money back. But
what, through people coming to see it in the tourism and knock on effects?
Yeah. They obviously want to, because these cities have they already have quite a large number of visitors. So I'm not quite sure what they feel.
They're short of
Manifesta, a very sort of rebarbative display of art that's quite difficult to get involved with, will really do for, you know, the kind of people you see on an EasyJet flight who, you know, go there and give lots of, you know, I don't know.
The reason to go there is to play golf. I mean, that's the other major tourist industry is the golf there.
Okay.
So on the plane, you're trying to guess whether people were going to play golf or go to Manifesta.
So Clara also went to Manifesta to explain.
Which is useful because you can join in. We want to kind of compare, don't we, Liverpool and Manifesta a bit. I'm interested in this principle behind why cities do it. I mean, we're not necessarily going to know exactly why they do it, but as you say, it's not always obvious, is it? I mean,
well, there's a sort of shadowy thing. When you look at the Manifesta website, it's quite funny. You have this, they have about 10 points of what a region needs to do to get Manifesta to come to their region. And the last one is sort of a slightly embarrassed, weirdly worded thing about give us lots of money, basically. But 3.3 million euros is not really a massive amount of money.
Considering what you get.
Yeah, they're pretty big things. There's hundreds of, 120 artists or something in loads of venues. So yeah,
I think it's important to bear in mind that, you know, when the manifesto or a biennial comes, it doesn't always, the exhibition is only a part of what they do. They also bring a whole team of educators who do education programs around and in the exhibitions, and quite interestingly, that often is at odds with what the curators intended. So on the one hand, you have the art education, which is for the local people, and on the other hand, you have a completely different and parallel discourse for those who have flown in and dropped out of the sky. And I have to say, I felt that very strongly in Manifesto when you arrive in these terribly sleepy towns where there's really not a huge amount going on. There's obviously high unemployment and major political issues. And then suddenly you have, the usual art crowd dropping out of the sky. And didn't you feel when you were, for example, part of the show is in San Anton prison, there was a particularly kind of gruesome feeling of spending time drinking your free Lavazza coffee and croissants in this prison yard?
It felt completely wrong, like really exploitative. And so basically there was, in Cartagena, there was a prison that was evacuated about only 6 months ago or something. It was day release prison, and it's completely sort of falling down, shabby kind of place. But it was strange, you know, they installed all this artwork in it, and you're walking around with this kind of vicarious enjoyment of art, or not, because it was quite an unpleasant display, actually. Yeah, it's a really odd setup.
Yeah. Was there also an autopsy museum was used as well? Is that right?
Well, it sounds pretty grim, but
that sounds really gruesome.
It's been used as a exhibition space for 10 years or something.
Okay.
Or less, and it's really beautiful. Cartagena, I have to say, it's an incredibly beautiful city. It's all sort of on a big hillside, looking across the Mediterranean, with this big open port that you can see, and it's sort of a mixture of
Roman ruins
and oil rigs. So yeah, it's
offshore.
Yeah, I think you're painting a very nice picture of it.
Well, it's a really strange, like, there's a massive port with huge great big cranes and stuff, and then also Roman amphitheatres and stuff.
Just as you mentioned the sea and or the port, its manifesto was to do with Africa, am I right?
Yeah, the intention was to create a dialogue with Africa.
Northern Africa.
Northern Africa.
Yeah.
Thank you. And
What sort of way do you think they intended that? I mean, because they obviously are very close to Africa, and there are people come across to Spain. How do they want to do it, do you think?
I think they really failed to do it.
Yeah, but what do you think their intention was? I was waiting for you to knock it after the intention was supplied. I mean, politically, presumably, to bring out that kind of whole. Clara,
I think
can you say?
This is kind of to do with the history of Manifesta, which was set up in a way to overcome the legacy of the Cold War and the East-West divide, and to create a new kind of idea of pan. I think Manifesto is about building communities, global communities through culture, and it began with Europe. And the fact that now they're looking slightly further afield towards Northern Africa, for example, is an acknowledgement of the way that Europe has changed demographically, and the way that the political situation has changed since 1989 as well, and this global situation, and that at the same in response to these major shifts, the discourse needs to shift as well. And Manifesto wants to be at the cutting edge of that discourse. So
right.
It's trying to be an initiator of cultural dialogue.
Yeah, which is a laudable aim, do you think? I mean, it sounds it to me. I mean, wasn't there also some...
It sounds laudable, but, you know, in order to have a dialogue, you need two people speaking.
For instance, Africa?
And North Africa really wasn't speaking very much. So
by lack of invitation?
Well, to explain the structure of Manifesto, how it was done this year, it was curated by three groups, three collectives of curators. One was called CPS, which stands for Chamber of Public Secrets. Another is called transit.org, And another is called ACAF, and that's Alexandra Contemporary Art Foundation, ACAF, yeah. So ACAF is obviously from Egypt, so there is some kind of connection
right
there. And I thought they were a pretty dynamic force within the biennial ACAF.
Yeah, your review makes them sound the most interesting, I think.
That's personally what I felt. Yeah. Clara feels that Transit was sort of more interesting, but
we can discuss that. That's right.
So in some ways Africa was involved in that way, but really there were so few Africans actually part of it. It was parodied by where is he from, this
he was French.
Colonel,
yes, Thierry Geoffroy.
I think he's Belgian or something. Or
dressed in a khaki and pith helmet emblazoned with the word artist colonialist.
Yeah, so he looks like, you know, the kind of typical African explorer, European African explorer.
Well, which is obviously an ironic comment, presumably, on this lack of link, is it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, so he had a sort of, his space that he had was actually in Saint Anton prison as well, and he'd put this space, he'd dedicated it to any African artist could show their work there. Obviously, there was none. He just had a sign up saying if you're North African, you can.
But no North Africans saw
some stuff there.
They didn't see the sign because they weren't there, or they didn't want to do it.
Yeah, so somebody told me the figure of the number of artists was 120, and the number of African artists in this exhibition was 8.
Yeah, so as a percentage, it's very low.
Yeah.
It doesn't reflect well on the link, does it? Really,
not particularly well.
On the other hand, I think that Thierry Geoffroy also kind of just flattened that landscape, and it's quite an easy swipe to take. It would have been more interesting if he'd actually used his connections to invite some artists.
Yeah, you mean it's irony being negative, really?
Well, and I think, he did another video installation which he did, which was also installed in the prison, was when he went around Murcian, Cartagena, shoving a microphone in people's faces and saying, do you have any Moroccan friends? Do you have any Spanish friends? And it turned out that people actually had a much better dialogue and understanding of one another, that the North African immigrants are much better integrated into Spain than his than the other performance that he did would indicate. So, but I didn't think it was terribly nuanced and didn't really. I mean, it was an obvious point.
I agree.
There was the director of the manifesto wrote, and Colin, you mentioned it, I think, comparing the Madic Biennale with the plight of African migrants in his essay, to expand on this sort of slightly difficult approach by the Westerners of Europe to. I mean, that does reflect not too well either, really, by the sound of it.
I found some of the art speak just absolutely bafflingly self-deluded. And that was one of the things that got me was Hedvig Figen. Is that the name?
Well, I don't know.
I've no idea how to say the name, but Hedvig Figen is the name of one of the founders of Manifesto.
Yeah, in his preface to the Manifesto 8 catalogue, I was quoting.
Yeah.
You were quoting.
Makes this comparison saying that there is that African migrants into Europe are nomadic, and so is Manifesto because it roams around different locations around Europe, and therefore they're a bit similar, which is a little bit crass given that the African immigrants are in a pretty precarious situation, maybe to do with life or death, whereas Manifesto might just fail and, you know, might be a few unemployed curators around, but that's it. So, I found that a little bit astonishing, to be honest.
Let's be a little more positive. Say, Clara, you were talking about... Well, you mentioned a difference, didn't you, Colin, between, I think, your enjoyment of... Am I going to get it right? ACAF.
ACAF,
ACAF. And, Clara, you liked another collective's curatorial
quite liked
project.
The Transit displays. Transit is a group, a network of exhibition spaces and cultural organisations in Vienna, Slovakia, Bratislava, and Prague. And they had a very, very they had a post-socialist agenda. I was hoping that they had advertised that they were going to discuss the theoretical links between post-socialism and post-colonialism. And I was disappointed by the degree to which they kind of failed to take up the post-colonialist strand. Having said that, I thought they had a lot of really, really very, very nice works. And one that I liked in particular, which was just a wonderful discovery for me, which made the whole trip very much worthwhile, was a film by Igor and Ivan Bukharov, who are young Hungarian filmmakers, and they had a beautiful film called Rudderless, which was about kind of tied in with the overall theme of this idea of the nomadic migrant worker. It's very much in the tradition of a Godard movie like Pierrot le Fou, for example. You have this this charming man who has various casual jobs in industry and lives in a caravan with a dog, and he's a drifter who drifts nomadically through life. So it's a very personal view on surviving and making friends and making your way in the neoliberal world. So that was a joy.
Colin, you mentioned something that I think that you liked, which I'm going to try and pronounce it properly. Wanda Raimundi Ortiz's video, Ask Chalut Etta Biennale Culture. I still do that very well, I know.
Well, yeah, this
basically a video piece.
She's a Latina woman from New York, I think. She makes these sort of direct, she's addressing the camera directly, and it's like she's giving advice to viewers, and it's as if her viewers are all Latino like herself, and presumably in these performances they know nothing about art, so she's explaining to them what a biennial is, how it works.
Yeah,
and they're pretty funny. I mean, I guess they could be a little bit crass and annoying as well, but within the context of biennial, it is quite funny, because she sort of really strips stuff down and tries to explain it in really ordinary terms.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I think that's quite interesting, because these biennales are a kind of weird invention of the art world, as well as the cult, as well as government cult and culture, I suppose. But they are difficult to understand for anybody who's not involved in that. And also, when artists get invited into them, they will want to sort of react against them in a way, won't they? I mean, it sounds as if quite a few of the works are kind of digging back at the thing they've invited to be in, really.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to be in, I guess, for everybody, for the curators and for artists.
Yeah.
One of the better responses I saw was by a group who are from Liverpool. So we could
link. Yeah. Well done. Excellent.
They're called Common Culture, and I never knew about them before, but they sort of range in age from born in 1964 or something to
they've been around a long time.
They were founded in the mid 90s, I think, as well. And they had a video there in which three Spanish actors were dressed up in these kind of gaudy 1970s kind of really bright clothes and ridiculous wigs, and they discussed the meaning of biennials whilst dancing to cheesy disco music.
Yeah,
and it was hilarious, and it was one of the most enjoyable things I saw there. But so much of that kind of work depends on the context. I'm not sure it would really work anywhere else.
No, but then in a sense that's fair, because it is a particular context that they've been put in, and if they've made the work especially. Because a lot of the work is commissioned presumably by Manifesto 8, and it's new work, isn't it? I mean, it is actually good in a way that it does generate new... It's for artists.
They do commission a lot.
An opportunity, which is, these days is a hard thing, and artists need... That's the way they make work, isn't it? So, positive point. Just before we leap to Liverpool, at the end of your review, you say there's a central problem. Like you say, I found little engagement with the central problem. I think you mean when going around Manifesto 8, but correct me if I get this wrong. How culture and art might intersect with... counteract or be instrumentalised by emergent conservative European politics. I've taken that slightly out of context, but what did you mean by that? Because I put a question mark by it, because I didn't quite understand what conservative European politics, in particular, was. Why you mentioned that? Do you remember?
Well, there's all sorts of the context of this seems very particular. You know, you have this very strategic region that's sort of fairly wealthy, and this idea of a dialogue with North Africa, But there are already dialogues going on outside art with North Africa and Europe. And a lot of those are controlled by people like Nicolas Sarkozy, the president of France, who's trying to come up with an idea of this Mediterranean Union that would cut off any country that's not directly bordering the Mediterranean. So France would be in, Spain would be in, Algeria would be in, etc.
But Germany and UK wouldn't.
Germany and UK wouldn't.
No, but it's a very interesting idea, I thought.
So effectively, it's a way of France really muscling in on the goods that they can glean out of North Africa. It's a very straightforward neoliberal agenda, and I didn't see any engagement with that in
you mean no engagement by artists on that proposal?
Well, within Manifesto in general, within the discourse, because there's so much talk within the Manifesto about questioning things, and it's almost like, should we question what we're questioning? And there's these circles of questioning, and you think, get down to the grip.
Whereas actually there was an issue, there was a reality.
There is an issue out there too.
Yeah, and they could have grabbed that a bit more. Yeah. Well, I think that's a very interesting point to end on talking about Manifesto with, really, because if we move to Liverpool being. Biennial, sorry, they call them so many different things, I get confused. But which was called Touched, wasn't it, Clara? And was in many various venues between September and November in Liverpool. You begin your review by quoting Lewis Biggs, who's the artistic director of this year's Liverpool Biennial. What did you think of what he wrote? I mean, you do criticise it quite pleasantly, I think.
Well, perhaps I was overly harsh.
No.
However, I did think it was quite problematic. He sort of couched this idea of touching and touching communities. The best art touches us in the head, the heart, and the hand, the mind, the body, and the spirit. This is a very particular kind of a discourse. He talked about a return to humanity in the face of the financial crisis. Now, that's really just moving away from politics, as far as I could see, and surely a financial crisis of the kind that we've just had ought to be a time to engage more with politics rather than to retreat from politics. So I saw that the written agenda was not really in line with some of the most interesting work that was in the biennial itself. I thought, for example, Alfredo Jarre, by installing his Marx lounge there, was...
Marx as in Karl Marx?
Yes, as in the Marx lounge. It was a new installation which he made, which was rather like a library stroke bookshop stroke workers reading room of sorts, so kind of taking on that taking up and updating, installing the constructivist workers' reading room in the contemporary biennial setting, which I thought was interesting, and trying to, in that sense, I think, bridge this gap between the biennial as a space of the consumption of culture, but also as a space which engages an audience which may not always be an art audience with new political questions. In what you mentioned earlier,
Colin,
yeah. What Colin was talking about earlier about how different artists respond to critiquing the whole structure of the biennial, I think, is important in Liverpool as well. And I thought one of the people who you might call it a new form of sort of institutional critique, so institutional critique of the kind that had once attacked the museum. Is now also being brought to bear on the structure of the biennial, and it's the nomadism of the biennial doesn't exempt it from this kind of critique.
No.
And Tania Bruguera, I thought the Cuban artist and the author of Cátedra Arte de Conducta, was one of the artists who did sophisticated and minimal way, I thought, critiqued and made this criticized this structure of the biennial. So if you went there for the opening, you were greeted by her at the doorway to one of the spaces on Renshaw Street. And unless you particularly knew who she was, you would have thought that she's just one of the helpers there.
The information assistant.
Yes. So, and this was part of her restaging of Alan Capra's happenings. She offered information about, you know, finding your way around and so on.
Was she different in some way to...
No,
so completely
to anybody else, yes.
Ah, subtle stuff. But that's fascinating. I would like to talk a little bit more about this Lewis Biggs thing, because it just strikes me that it is fascinating that in a way, it sounds slightly different to Manifesto, in that there's one person who directed this. Was there just one curator of the Liverpool Biennial? Do we know? I mean, because obviously Manifesto had about three different collectives, didn't it? But this is all done by Lewis?
No, I don't think so. I think the different spaces had different curators.
Right.
I particularly enjoyed the one at Renshaw Street. I thought that was really excellent. I mean, what's going on at Liverpool is the connection of many very different existing spaces. And you have really a very wide range of spaces from Tate Liverpool to Renshaw Street, which is just a disused shop, basically.
Yeah.
So curatorially, yes. I mean, it's.
I mean, they won't be following his writing, will they? Because, I mean, he writes what he likes in the catalogue, but they then curate their own spaces. Is that right?
Yes, which I think is absolutely the way.
Yes, it should be done
with biennials.
Yeah.
I thought Biggs, it was a difficult thing that he was trying to do, and it's always difficult, I think, if you're the curator of one of these vast biennials, because you're trying to reach so many different audiences at the same time. So you're trying to reach the local audience and at the same time appeal to try and make a claim that this is somehow a sophisticated contribution to the discourse of contemporary art. And it's very hard to bridge that gap. There was some interesting, as if in Manifesto, the kind of sticking point was this question of immigration and race in the sort of neoliberal context. Then I thought that in the case of the Liverpool Biennial, then the idea of sort of multiculturalism and the rhetoric of difference was also quite problematic. But I also thought that class was something which was very much latently present but unresolved and really untackled in the Liverpool context.
Yeah, it's a city in Britain which has the lowest unemployment, the highest unemployment rate.
Well, I think I've not been to this year's Liverpool Biennial, but I've been to a couple before, and it's a biennial that is usually has a big segment of it that's quite populist, unlike Manifesto, which is sort of unremittingly kind of involved in these dialogues and discussions. Liverpool Biennial, you come out of the main station in Liverpool and there's a massive great big red sign saying Biennial, come this way, you know, 63 Renshaw Street or whatever it was, where they had the big hardware store a few years ago and they shut down, you know. And there's a real attempt to involve people, and they have Yoko Ono's ladders in the old cathedral that was bombed out and all this kind of stuff. So that there's this real sort of attempt to deal with it in a populist way, which is sort of interesting, and it's perhaps viable if you take it from an administrative kind of instrumentalized point of view. But obviously it's completely, you know, it's people would much rather have jobs than a big art show. So,
you know. Listen, we've got about 1 minute to go.
Yeah.
And just on the issue of money, in a sense, we're talking about whether people earn money or don't earn money. You're about to go on a march, Clara, I believe, which is to do with cuts in education particularly. Just say a tiny bit about it as a little promo for it.
Okay. Yes, everybody's on strike today. There's a huge march at 12:30 Westminster. against the current government's higher education cuts. They've cut 80% of the teaching budget for arts subjects.
Yeah, which is a big cut. We're not a live programme, so people won't rush out and go because they won't hear it. But it's important that we mention it because I think that it's an issue we've covered in our
huge
monthly
cuts, which are really going to enormously deter people from going to university. People are going to have to take on huge debts and they're going to think very seriously about that. So
yeah, and the arts have taken a harder blunt cut than the sciences, for instance.
Yeah, the sciences are really largely unaffected. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I think that the cultural tourism does bring in a huge amount of money. I mean, this is a major part of the.
Yeah, it's a very curious approach by the government. We've mentioned it on the program before, and we have to mention it again, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you.
I think it was a very enjoyable conversation, and hope it encourages you to still go to some of these. I believe that they may still be on. The Liverpool Biennale is on until 28th of November. Thanks for listening to Art Monthly on Resonance FM. Goodbye.